Hey, Smartless listeners, it's Will. I snuck in here because I really wanted to connect with you guys. You know, just us, just one-on-one, just being honest, just sharing experiences, and really breaking down all these barriers, you know. Anyway, this has been great. All right, let's go. It's an all-new Smartless.
So, listener, Arnett's got his TV hair on right now.
Yeah.
He looks incredibly handsome.
They just snapped it in.
You're on a lunch break, is that right? Mm-hmm. Down there in Atlanta?
Indeed. Mm-hmm.
And what are you going to have for lunch today, aside from a great interview?
You know, today for lunch, I think I'm having, it's a salad. Mm. It's a Mediterranean salad. I've been eating these great, by the way, if there's anybody and you're in the Atlanta area and looking for some food, my friend Brandy down here, she has a nice little business.
Boy.
She makes food for
someone
people.
Someone just got a deal on their monthly expenditure.
No, I'm already done.
Spell her last name.
What's
her website?
She works with a lot of people, and I got to say, incredibly good, delicious. I'm already done. I've already fully paid, so that I'm not getting anything out of it other than she's so good at what she does. And a person who works super hard and always delivers. I've been really impressed with it.
Enough.
You know what I noticed the other day, too? I want to say this. You know when you go online, sometimes you go on Twitter and you see people going, especially people who have
hang on a second,
marks.
But listen to about hashtag relatable. Did you just give a recommendation for a personal chef if anyone's ever in Atlanta?
It's so relatable.
Yeah, I'm just, sorry, to movie and TV stars. Sorry, that's what I meant to say.
Any jet carriers you want to plug to?
Jet Edge. They're your favorite. You're the ones who turned me on to them. So,
pretty sweet.
You want to go down this road with me?
No, continue, please.
Mm-hmm. What I want to say is this. You know, you go on, you see these blue verified checkmark people and they complain about stuff and they tag like, you know, the company like, hey, Coca-Cola, I opened up a Coke and it was flat, or like, hey, Hertz, my car was at the, and they're doing it in a public way to complain because they want to get to the front of the line because they're real noisy, you know, squeaky wheels. Mm. And there aren't enough.
Said noisy bottom.
I know, but I almost did. Well, bossy. I was going to say a bossy bottom.
Hey, keep Scotty out of this.
So, or a power bottom.
Oh, Sean.
But you know what? Like the other day, I was thinking, I traveled back and forth from here, from Atlanta to New York.
Is the plane getting close to the run to the landing zone?
And I flew on Delta, and I had weather delays both ways. Mm-hmm. And the people at Delta Airlines, can I tell you something?
Sure.
Everybody was amazing. The people who were working the gate, the people checking you in, the people on the plane, all the attendants, everybody was amazing. No, I feel like in that moment, I thought, all these people, they get so much shit all the time, and every one of these people was so fucking good.
That's
and I want
nice.
Them to, and I thought like, they need to know that they were doing a good job. And I got no skin in this game other than to say they were really
somebody
nice people.
Somebody had a real nice Easter, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I did.
For you.
I did with the kids and stuff. It was nice, but, you know.
Is this before or after you got in a huge fight with the flight attendants?
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is, look at the footage. I didn't start it. My mask was on. No, it was honestly, these people were so amazing. I just thought, why don't they just get some love? How about we just start going, hey, these people were great at their job.
I love that.
So that's it.
Well, you're preaching the choir. You know, my mother was a flight attendant for Pan
Am
all those years. And
that's right.
They don't get their due.
You know what, Jason? Somebody asked me about this today. True story. Did your mom and dad meet on a flight? True story?
No, but they did meet. My dad and his buddy went to what they were told was a stewardess party there New York. Yeah,
no.
And they were like, well, let's go get laid.
No.
And they both found their wives there.
Wow.
No kidding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was just a party of stewardess or flight attendants, female flight attendants.
In those days, it was stewardess. Pan Am, too, you know, with that bowler hat and the little powder blue outfit.
Wow.
Pretty top level.
Never knew that. I can't wait to interview you. It's going to be so exciting.
Gang.
Yeah.
Today brings us a fella that I've been watching and studying and admiring for as long as I can remember. He is an incredible actor in both comedy and drama and is equally talented as a director in both genres as well. At just 9 years old, He was immediately one to watch when he shot from the cannon on the short-lived but much-loved series, Kate McShane. Sean, huh? And at 15, he doubled down with a shocking arc on the subversive yet sexy Guiding Light.
What?
After a brief and inspired take on adult films called The Hustler of Money, he found work at Saturday Night Live. Not seeing what he was looking for there, he went on to bring us some of our favorite characters in both television and film. Characters like Garth Motherloving, Kaka Pipu, Pew Pew, Silly Sammy, Gaylord, Chaz, Derek, Guitar Center Guy, and the deeply sensitive, intuitive, magical Tony Wonder. Please welcome Jerry and Ann's boy, Mr. Ben Franklin Stiller.
No. Oh, my.
Ben.
Jesus.
Oh, look.
I like you pulled out the Kate McShane. That's pretty good.
Listen, Wikipedia really brings all the deep research when you need it. And I didn't know your middle name was Franklin. What a hoot.
No, my middle name is Edward Mira.
I know, but wouldn't it be great if it was Franklin too?
Benjamin Franklin Stiller.
Come on, coming out with a laugh. That's Jerry and Ann's work.
First of all, I love the show, guys.
Thank you.
And it's really fun to be here. Yeah. But I was listening to how it gets ramped up, and I couldn't tell where it started.
Yeah.
So the chemistry feels very real. It's like a real thing. It's not something you guys put on for the show.
No, as you see, we just connect. We just start rolling. There's no method to it. And God, it's amazing.
It's pure stupidity.
But Will, you look like you're doing a confessional for The Bachelor.
Or hold up a sign and say that you haven't been beaten.
I'm in an office in a production office.
And you got good lighting there, though.
It's not bad.
Really good lighting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ben, are you in Bruce Wayne's library? Or
I am in my room, my office at my house in New York, in Westchester.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. It does have that kind of vibe.
So you're still up there in Westchester, Ben?
Yes, for I guess like the last 12 or 13 years. We kind of go back and forth between New York City and Westchester. But
that's nice.
I feel like, Jason, like the last time that we had dinner or hung out was when we were moving from L.A. back to New York. And do you remember this?
Walk me through it.
Well, we had dinner. I forget who else was there. I don't remember much.
Remind him of your name one more time, too. That would be good.
I think J.J. Abrams was at the restaurant and came over and said hello. That's what I remember. And then you I feel like you made a joke about, like, you're moving to New York, but you'll be back, like, in a year and a half or something. Do you remember that?
I'm shocked that I don't remember that. Was I drinking still at the time?
I think we both were.
At least 20 years ago.
Yeah. I've loved being in New York for the last.
Jealous that you lived there, and you because the Westchester. First of all, I was born in Rye, so I guess that's the reason I've got some sort of hankering to get back there. But
and you've stayed in Rye this whole time.
Hey,
you flipped the spelling, but you stayed right in it. I mean,
did you go to Rye Playland as a kid?
So they say. I left when I was two, but I've been back there. I actually shot at Playland.
You did?
We shot some of a film there.
So it's still open. It's still happening.
It's still open, okay. But it's so pretty up in there. And where you guys are, it's just like... Oh,
this is how, Sean, you'd know Rye. This is where the New York Rangers practice facility is.
Oh, God. I think I have some photos.
Yeah.
I have some photos of me back then.
Yeah.
Ben, do you remember the last time we had dinner?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Say yes.
I love that it's a circle of people who don't remember having dinner with each
other. Do you remember it?
No, I don't.
We've never had
it. It never happened.
Oh,
I know it never happened.
Could you imagine, Ben, if you were like, yes, it was wonderful. Thank you for paying.
Will, do you remember the last time we had lunch?
I do, actually.
Have been during a lunch break on Arrested Development?
No, it was at the Chateau, and we were talking about Burt Wonderstone.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
How about this? How about I remembered and you didn't? Nobody can stump me for memory.
Was Stuart Kornfeld there? I feel like he might have been.
Do you want to know? Wait, one second, Ben. That's one of my favorite comedies of all time, Burt Wonderstone. I think it's hysterical.
This is Steve Carell as well? Yes?
Yeah, right. Yes.
And is Jim Carrey as well? No.
I never saw it.
You're conflating. Ben, we talked about it. Ben and I talked about it years ago when I was still on Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And we talked about it. And I think Stuart was there, as Farrell calls him, old Redbeard. And every morning we were on Blades of Glory, Ben, which you produced, as you know, with Stuart.
Yep.
And Farrell would walk up to Stuart and grab him by the beard and goes, "It looks so real."
rest in peace, sweet Stu.
Yeah, he was my producing partner for about a long time, and he was an amazing guy.
Love that man. Yeah.
Fascinating guy. So, Ben, now you've been... I feel like you have just gone down the directing hole. By the way, that's in a good way. You're just directing series and movies all the time. And it's like, are you ever going to emerge again as Ben Stiller, comedic, humongous comedic star? Yeah.
Ben, he gets on me about this too. Don't let him beat you up.
I'm trying to crawl out of the directing hole. It's a deep hole, you know?
I mean, I don't buy it.
It's... I like it. I like being in the hole. I mean, I do enjoy it.
Keep it clean.
And I try to not think about acting when I'm directing. I actually don't worry about it when I'm directing. I enjoy just directing. Because a lot of years I spent, you know, directing and acting, which you do, Jason, incredibly well. And I do remember another interchange we had a couple of years ago, maybe like 3 years ago.
That's an accurate way of describing spending time with Bateman. Interchange.
An interchange we had about directing. It was the night you won directing Emmy.
Yes.
Well deserved.
Thank you,
and
sir.
You were talking about directing and acting, and you said that you like it because you feel like it takes out the middleman.
That, yeah, and it's a one less actor. You've got to have this sometimes delicate creative negotiation with.
Yeah, you're kind of making it sound easy. I think it's not that easy, and I feel like you're able to do it very well.
But Ben, I would say this though, Ben. As Jason said, it cuts out that long conversation. And Jason, in your case, it cuts out, if you've ever acted with Jason, it cuts out the 30 minutes of questions from Jason. He's his own worst, director or
Isn't it
actor.
Isn't fun watching me ask myself questions though? Because what I do is I switch over to the other side and I answer it, and then I.
What he likes to do is go like, "Well, this is a really simple situation. There must be a complicated reason for why it's like this."
but Ben...
Do you like to watch the playback of yourself? Do you do that? Because I worked with a director actor once a long time ago who loved to watch himself in playback. And we would just watch himself and laugh at himself.
Yeah, no, that's...
Really?
I'd love three guesses at that. No, I won't do that, but don't you... I mean, I've been trying to do what you do from an acting standpoint my whole career, and that is basically this great proxy for the audience. You are the audience. You are the everyman. You are the straight man. You are the person the camera needs to cut to after something outrageous has happened or something dramatic has happened or something like that. So don't you find that when you were acting and directing that you had this great sort of ease that you knew that the sort of the grounding element was taken care of, that you didn't have to worry that there was going to be this person at the center that is normal so you could take these bigger swings comedically around with the other characters and stuff?
Sometimes I felt like that. I mean, I did feel like once it came around to having to do my stuff, I kind of had a sense of what I wanted to do. But I also felt a lot of the time, and maybe it's because I did it over a number of years and sort of got to the point where it felt like a lot of work to then have to jump, like set up the shot and then jump in front of the camera. And then you have to act.
Right.
Then you have to do it. And I felt like that was harder to do than... I felt like I couldn't concentrate on both. And the first day that I started on Escape at Dannemora, which is like the first thing I directed I didn't act in, the first day I was so happy. Yeah. I was so relieved to set up a shot and then not have to jump in front and sort of care what, you know, like my hair was and all that stuff.
But what isn't acting seems as comfortable for you as it is for me. I'm not saying it's easy, but it seems comfortable enough for you where it wasn't that much of an effort to act. And instead it was actually, here's somebody who's in front of the camera that is mindful of all the other technical things that are going on that you can actually help by how you are acting or by hitting that mark or not shadowing that person, or did you find that it was nice to have a soldier there that was taking care of all this stuff for you?
A a soldier in myself, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Somebody that's making it all kind of come together.
Yeah, but I never really thought about it that way because I felt like, okay, that's just part of everything that's going on, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, what do you think, though, when you're doing it and you're
guys,
directing...
we're going to be with you in 1 second. Sorry.
No, no, no. You know what? This is fascinating because this is much
more... Is it, though? I'm waiting for somebody to start snoring.
It's, okay. It's much more of a deep dive into how Jason works than you at every moment. And what's great is that his sort of, his acting ambition is to just provide a blank slate for the audience to, for the editors to cut to. I mean, what an artistic objective to have. Fucking great. I want to give them something. Just a cut point.
Somebody cannot block the light. Yeah.
His nickname has become Cut Point, and which is great. You'd think that he'd be insulted by it. But,
right,
but
now, Ben. All right. So then,
I was just gonna say this, Jason. Kind of to what you were saying, Jason, which is. I don't know if it's entirely true. You have played characters who have been at the center of a bunch of insane situations, and who are sort of put upon. But you've also your bread and butter has also been playing characters who are completely unhinged or completely out there. You've true. Actually moved quite seamlessly between the two, and I wonder. I actually have always wondered, like, which do you like playing?
A bunch of characters are going through my head right now.
I know, same here.
Between unhinged and blank slate. Yeah,
Between unhinged and blank slate. What would you rather do? Because the robot loves big blank slate. Go ahead.
I enjoy. I mean, honestly, it's been a few years. I never thought I'd go this long in my life without acting. Really. Yeah. It's been like 5 or 6 years, and I never, as an actor over the years, thought, oh, I take that much time off. And I think when I look back at it, I enjoyed all of it. Enjoyed the different, you know, some of those broader characters were, you know, tonally things that are just so like over the top that I felt like it was like more fun to do that kind of thing. But then I'd also enjoy being in somebody else's movie where I could just be, a real human being and try to also like kind of maybe not have to worry about really maybe not be as self-aware about what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Do you ever get like we are all four of us, we all produce stuff as well, right? And I find myself when I'm producing something and an actor has an issue or wants to discuss, I'm like, God, I don't want to fucking deal with that. They're crazy. Actors are fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And then I'm an actor in something and I turn into a crazy person.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel that way when you direct? Are you like, I know how to deal with this kind of situation or this pathos of this human being because I've been there? It's a shorthand,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what Jason is saying. Like, you don't have to worry about that with yourself,
right,
you can just kind of do your thing. But Jason, you have to deal with this, and when you're directing and acting with other actors, every actor has their own thing, has their own point of view where they're coming from, and you have to figure out how to connect with them. And sometimes when you're acting in a scene with them and you have to also give them something or try to give them some direction, that can be, I mean, I'd imagine on the show, since you've worked with these same actors for a long time, you guys have a sort of a shorthand. And you
know
each other.
Yeah, but then there's also the day players as well that you don't have that history with or any other project where, there's a different thing you need to do as a director as opposed to an actor, for sure, with respect to making sure people are comfortable.
Also that thing, Jay, I mean, I don't know, Ben, I don't know how much of the stuff that you directed, you also wrote. I did a short-lived series, 2 seasons, called Flake that we did on Netflix, small show.
Hold for applause, please.
No, there's no applause to be had, but it was an experiment in, I don't know.
But it was great, having
written it, thank you. But I wrote it and then show ran it and acted in it and then second season directed. So I'd be in the scene with another actor. And great, I loved everybody who we had on the show and they were great.
However,
having written the scene, and so then I've already got it coming from that, and then showrunning, and then thinking about, well, we're never going to use this. And, you know, so I was constantly in that, and I found it very difficult sometimes. The last thing on the list was acting in the scene.
Right.
So, I felt like that was the thing that I was like, I should be paying more attention to the acting in the scene, but I'm thinking about all these other things first.
Yeah, and ironically, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know?
At the end of the day.
That's what I would feel like. Okay, at the end of the day, I have to make sure that I'm present in the scene and somehow connecting and, you know, that's...
Well, I was going to say, so Tropic Thunder, for instance, who you wrote with all of our good friends.
Massive applause.
Yeah. Justin Theroux, who's not a listener of the show, so we can mention...
No need to hold for applause there.
Yeah. Right?
I heard the Justin episode that you guys did.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
And talk about a guy who gets down to it, and you guys wrote it wrote together, and he got down into it. And if he had sleeves, he would have rolled them up.
Yeah.
But you guys, he
owns no sleeves.
Doesn't own
no
any
sleeves.
He owns no sleeves. Yeah.
Didn't you almost buy him a box of sleeves for Christmas?
I did.
Will?
I did for Christmas. Yeah. And I was going to buy him. Yeah, Ben, I was going to buy him a box of sleeves.
But if you had such veiny biceps, come on, would you
have
sleeves?
True. Yeah, that's true.
Sleeveless.
At 50, I mean, the guy looks like he's
beautiful,
29.
Beautiful, veiny biceps.
He's beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
He sent us a photo yesterday to Jason and me from the jungle of Mexico. He's wearing a hat, and he said, I'm jonesing for adventure. And then you sort of see the whole photo, and he said, Indiana jonesing. And I was like, hey, buddy, I didn't know there was a Nick Fouquet hat store down in the jungle. But anyway, my point is this. You write Tropic Thunder, and then you're in the scene. Do you have those moments when you're in a scene as the writer where you're going, huh, this is going differently than I thought?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just comes down to it when you're doing the scene, what's going to make the scene work? Does it feel like it's working, you know? And it becomes its own thing. And I think that's, no matter what, even if you are the writer and you're not in it, you have to let go of your idea of what the scene, you think the scene was or what you wrote, and just look at what's happening in front of you. Right, as a director, and then figure out how to find the life in it in the moment, which is, I think that's just directing.
You know? Can I ask you something? First of all, Ben, I have to say, you were one of those actors that I've always looked up to my whole life, and one of those people, you know, we all have those kind of inspirational, especially in comedy, and I was like, oh my God, I would kill to have Ben Stiller's career. He seems like such a great guy. He's super talented.
You actually said, I'd kill Ben to have his career.
That's what you said.
Well,
that's
what I'm getting at. That was the actual quote,
And then going on to directing, and I was like, wow, that's just so cool. I'm getting to my favorite show of all, one of my favorite shows of all time now is Severance. Yeah. I don't know if anybody's seen it.
But, of course. It's incredible.
It's amazing. Thanks. I don't know if you know, I'm in a play with one of your lead actors now.
Tramell Tillman, right?
Yeah. Jamel Tillman, yeah, he's amazing.
Incredible.
Don't say anything about that. I haven't finished it yet.
Okay. Can you please, just as a huge, huge fan of you and that show, tell me the genesis of how that came about? And
it's, without ruining the ending, Ben.
Yeah.
It's, so, you know, in the finale,
I would kill you.
No. It's incredible. By the way, that finale is amazing.
It's a great show business story. The writer, Dan Erickson, had been trying to get something produced as a writer for a while, and he sent the script to our production company. This is 5+ years ago. He sent as a writing sample.
Wow.
And Jackie Cohn, who's the creative executive of our company, gave it to Nikki Weinsack, who was working at the company, and we read it, and we was like, this is great. It's a great writing sample, but I was like, this would be a great show. And so we just got it set up at Apple. They were the only people who wanted to develop it. You know how you have a piece of material, you take it around town, and you pitch it, and you see who wants to do it. And I find that a lot of the time, usually just one or two places that want to do something.
Right.
And they were the ones who wanted to do it. They were just starting up. They didn't really exist yet. And
Christopher Walken, John Turturro, Patricia Arquette, Adam Scott. I mean, it's the cast is, Tramell Tillman. The cast is amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't know Chris Walken was in it yet because I'm only...
Nice going, Sean.
Ben, I'm going to kill you.
Help.
You're one episode in?
No, I'm three episodes
That's in. Incredible. That's incredible. It's such a great show.
We will be right back.
We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8+ acres. I gotta keep it down, because if my hens find out, they don't have 8+ acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're gonna go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. I just, as I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts. We get support from Canva. When your work, presentations, and docs look good, you look good. And you can design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform. It helps people design compelling visual content and is great for designing any type of presentation and great for any teammate. So our team at Smartless is using Canva when they're coming up with different design concepts for various things with related to Smartless and Smartless Media, because we have a lot of stuff going on. It's a busy crew, okay? And if it wasn't for Canva, they'd all be fired. Supercharge your work with AI-powered Canva presentations, docs, videos, and more. In just a few seconds, you can generate slides and text from a prompt. AI is built into Canva right where you work, so you can stay on task without any app switching. It's AI that's easy to learn and even easier to use. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva is perfect for any work task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work. Thank you to one of our new sponsors, My Mochi Ice Cream, for supporting the show. I just discovered cookies and cream, My Mochi Ice Cream, and I'm a little obsessed, but I'm a lot obsessed. Do you not know what My Mochi Ice Cream is? Picture this. It's a perfect little scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream wrapped in the softest, sweetest dough known to mankind. My Mochi Ice Cream is sweet, it's chewy, it's cool, it's creamy, all at the same time. It comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. That cookies and cream, I've always been a cookies and cream fan, but then when I had the My Mochi, oh my gosh, I mean, I was like, my mouthy loved it, first of all. An absolute knockout. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are gluten-free and about 90 calories each. You can find My Mochi at Target or go to mymochi.com to find your nearest grocery store. Discover the cool, creamy, joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
And now back to the show.
When you look at something as precise as what Severance is, as far as filmmaking goes, who is that inside you? Where did that guy grow from somebody who was a child of 2 incredible comedy stars, and you coming up in sort of sketch world and then pure comedy world and then maybe some dramatic work? And like, how did that muscle sort of develop in you where it was like, you're such an incredible filmmaker, the precision and the focus to detail and camera work and sound and lighting and all of this stuff? How did that develop?
I mean, I feel like it's always been a part of what I love since I was a kid. And I don't know, I'm curious, I'm not just throwing this back to you, Jason, but since you do this, like, have you always loved directing?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Since you were a kid?
But did it come like I did, where it was just from watching people around on the set, like, oh my God, look how you make fake life. It's like, I became fascinated with what a crew does. Like, a cast and stuff, acting and all that stuff. Yeah. It was like, but that was familiar to me. But seeing how people created, like, oh, this is how you make an audience a little bit scared. You put the camera on your shoulder. And you, like, all these little tricks. And
I love that. Yeah. I loved all of the nuts and bolts of filmmaking as a kid. I would get American Cinematographer. You mentioned Kate McShane, my early credit. That was my mother's show. Yeah. My mother had a series on CBS, an hour drama where she played an Irish lawyer who, you know, solved cases every week. It only lasted for half a season. But I remember going on the set of that at Paramount Studios, and I played Susan Strasberg's son, who was Lee Strasberg's daughter.
Way.
And yeah. And I had one scene. I was, you know, 9 years old. And I remember I was waiting around a corner on the set. I remember how the set smelled, how the fresh paint and the lights. And there was a cue light for me that was that when the light, when the red light, when the red light went off, then I would go in. And I just remember thinking, oh, that is so cool. And I was just fascinated with all of it and special effects makeup and, you know, just the process. So it was always, you know, I was obsessed with all those Planet of the Apes movies and Poseidon Adventure and all that. So I, actually the outside part of it, sort of the mechanics of it was more interesting to me at first than the actual telling of stories or expressing some sort of, you know, emotion. It was more about that stuff. And for a while I thought I wanted to be a cinematographer when I was a kid.
But both of you guys had very, so if you think about it, you explained, you guys had very... not the same trajectory, but you had very, there was similar that you were both young. Jason told the story recently how the first time when he lost his virginity, he had a cue light. Isn't that right, Jason?
Yeah.
And I said,
can we just hold the cue just a little bit longer for me?
And they kept telling him, you jumped your cue, you jumped your cue.
Yeah.
But that was...
the light was started flashing.
Premature cue light, huh?
Yeah, but I mean, both your parents were, of course, your mom and dad, your mom, who I had the pleasure of knowing a little bit, and I did that movie with her years ago, Southie, with the great Ann Mira, and a lovely lady, and was always so kind and sweet whenever I interacted with her. And then your dad, of course... was just the great Jerry Stiller. I mean, you grew up with these, you know, these people, these comedy, you grew up in a comedy environment and to Jason's point, in a cinema environment. And Jason, your dad was a director and a writer and your sister was an actor and is an actor and you guys both grew up in it.
In it.
Was there any other way for you to go but to both become directors? I don't think so.
Or just staying in this business. I mean, I would have been screwed, you know, if I was forced to do anything else.
I never thought about doing anything else. I, you know, for better or for worse.
Did you go to college? Did you get a degree in anything else?
No. I went to UCLA for 9 months, and then I quit. I went to the acting drama department because I wanted to go to the filmmaking department, but they didn't have it didn't start until junior year back then. And so, and I couldn't get into USC film school, and I not great grades. So I went to UCLA, which, you know, good enough grades to go there.
Harder to get into UCLA now.
Yeah. And I...
is that true?
Yeah.
I did not do well there. I just sort of didn't assimilate, and I kind of just was like, well, I wanted to be doing it. So I quit and came back to New York. And
so then did you feel a pressure just to make ends meet, knowing that, okay, now I'm all in. I'm not going to study any other career. I'm quitting college. I'm moving to New York. Did you have that sense of like, well, I'm going to have to make rent and provide?
Well, my parents were like, you could come home, stay home, and figure it out. And, you know, they didn't kick me out. They didn't kick me out. But there was that feeling when I came back, when I finally quit school. And I remember just coming back to my parents' apartment and then just like, and thinking, now what? Now what do I do? How do I go forward? And so I started, you know, I worked as a busboy at a restaurant on Columbus Avenue. And then I started going to acting classes and started auditioning. But it took me about 3 years to actually get any work.
Did you worry that you were going to get out from under the immense... shadow of your parents?
I guess somewhere I did, but I think when you're that young and you just sort of have this idea of what you want to do, you don't think about it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know how you felt, but I never thought about it that way. I knew that I had to figure out how to do my thing, and it was a little bit sometimes daunting because I would go in and, you know, sometimes you're not, when you're not anonymous and you're not, and I wasn't very good too. I wasn't great at auditioning. I wasn't really that comfortable as an actor. And so I would sort of fail a lot and not anonymously, you know, be like, oh, Jerry Nance kid came in and he wasn't that great.
did you ever see though, your mom or dad, like with the ups and downs of getting parts, not getting jobs, struggling here and there, then maybe soaring and then maybe coming back down, all of the roller coaster of doing the business, did that ever sway you from not wanting to do it?
No, it didn't. I mean, at that time I was so thinking about my own thing and like what I wasn't even thinking about where my parents were because they were who they were.
Yeah.
But when I look back at it now, and I've been working on a documentary about my parents.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, that's
cool.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Yeah, and it's been really interesting to kind of look at their, my dad saved everything. So there's so much footage and writing and all these great, archives of stuff that they had. But they were going through kind of a tougher time when I quit school and came back. And they were trying to figure out who they were at that point in their career. But I was so unaware of that because I was just thinking of my own thing. And now when I look back at it, they were having to figure out, I was probably, I'm now my dad's age when I came home from school,
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about what he was doing then and trying to find himself. Not till Seinfeld, really, because he loved performing. He loved being, he just loved doing it. And at that time, that was pre-Seinfeld. He was sort of trying to figure out not being in the comedy act with my mom anymore.
Yeah.
How to figure it out.
Yeah. Ben, do you ever wonder about just sort of in the context of your own relationship to your parents who were performers and then your kids and think about what their perspective is of you guys? Or Jason, do you think about it? Because I've thought about it a few times now, recently, especially as the kids are getting older and becoming teenagers, about I always make the joke when the kids come to, anytime they come to work with me, I'm like, hey, is it fun watching dad get his makeup put on? because how fucking weird is that? Or watching them, 50 people dress, trying to make my hair look okay. And then like, Will, put that other shirt on. And like in front of my son, who's 13, he must be like, what is going on?
Uh-huh.
Do you guys think about that?
I don't.
Yeah. No? Just because you're used to it?
Yeah. I think they get it at this age now, I guess. But it is odd for sure.
I mean, my daughter's 20 and my son's going to be 17. And they both have very, clear points of view on show business and acting and, their perception of my career and Christine's career. And, they've grown up around it. So they have their own ideas about it, which is interesting to me. And they've watched all of that stuff. And I think a lot of it is kind of weird, but it's also, they see the perspective on it too. And, that I love doing it. And I think they get the positive part of it too. But it's something that I grew up with too. I was around my parents getting makeup on and all. I have these visceral memories of that and loving it. Loving being around the backstage of it and all
it's
that.
Because it's different. They're not going to an office. You mentioned Christine, of course. Jason and I know Christine very well from Arrested Development days.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got to spend a lot of time with her, and amazing, just awesome. And every time I think about, the other thing I think about when I think about you and Arrested Development, it reminds me of the Ben Stiller show, because you guys were on the air for 1 year and you won the Emmy for Best Comedy.
That's right.
Which is very...
It was crazy, because we'd already been canceled, too.
You'd already been canceled. And so when we won, David Cross said to Jason and me, I don't know if Jason remembers, like, uh-oh, this doesn't look good. I've been down this path before.
Right.
Talk to us a little bit about the Ben Stiller show, how it came to be, and how it burned so bright and so quickly.
Now, was this was before or after SNL?
This was after SNL. After. I was at SNL for literally for 6 weeks.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And why did you jump?
Go SNL first.
I mean, it's...
You've probably told this story a million times. I'm so sorry.
Well, I basically got on SNL because I made a short film that was a takeoff on The Color of Money, which was called The Hustler of Money.
This is the adult film. Yeah.
Yes, and I was doing an impression of Tom Cruise, and Jim Downey, who was the head writer at the time...
Sure.
He liked it, and Lorne put it on the air. And then they said, you can come and audition and be an apprentice writer and a featured player. And I wanted to make short films. I wanted to direct little films like Albert Brooks did.
Yeah.
And, which I grew up watching and thinking that's the funniest thing. Like him doing, the new fall season where he'd, make fun of the shows were coming out and things like that. Yeah. And they weren't doing that at the time. It was pre all the Lonely Island guys and all that. So I was just there as a featured player, and I was not great at live performing. I did not like it. I would get nervous. I didn't feel like I could really do my thing. It was hard to navigate. And I had a chance to do what I wanted to do on MTV, because MTV was doing these little, sort of like half video shows. Like basically, like they show video. If you showed videos, you could do comedy sketches, but it had to be like half and half videos and comedy. And so they were basically saying, if you want to do that, you can do that here. So I decided to go do that.
Who championed you at MTV? Do you remember?
Well, I mean, Doug Herzog.
Yeah, he was great.
You know, running the network. Yeah,
he's great.
And Freston too.
Tom Freston. He gave us a shot.
The great Tom Freston.
Yeah, and
the most interesting man in the world, Tom Freston. Mm-hmm. By the way,
inspired that whole campaign for Dos Equis.
He really is.
Not a lot of people know that.
Yeah, he is.
He truly is.
I've never really known him that well, but he always seems incredibly intriguing.
He's the best guy. He's the most interesting. You can walk into a room with the biggest music stars on the planet, and everybody just wants to talk to Freston. It's a true story.
And that was an interesting time at MTV because they were just starting to do programming. So they let us do our thing. And then from that, fledgling Fox network saw what we were doing and said, hey, come and develop something. HBO was producing it. Chris Albrecht, who was an executive at HBO. And we were doing it for HBO and Fox, HBO Independent Production. So we were basically for like 2 years developing this sketch show. And we did like 3 pilots for it. Every time we couldn't figure out... They couldn't figure out like what was the best way to frame the show. So we
tried. Who was writing that with you? Is you? You were at the helm.
Apatow and Odenkirk. And
first, it was me and Jeff Kahn, who was my roommate and writing partner, and we were doing an act that we then turned into that MTV show. And then I met Judd.
Yeah.
And Judd and I clicked. He was doing stand up, and I think he was doing like the Young Comedian special or something. And we just started hanging out. And I was going and hanging out at the Improv and watching Janine Garofalo and Bob, and Bob and I had met at SNL when I was there, and he was writing at the time with Conan. And so
was Andy Dick doing stand-up?
Andy Dick was actually in Chicago at the time.
Yeah.
And I did a movie in Chicago called Next of Kin, this Patrick Swayze movie, and I made a short while I was there, and I met Andy Dick.
Wow.
Andy Dick came, and literally Andy Dick, the way I met Andy Dick was I was at my hotel in Chicago, and he knocked on the door. I opened the door, and there was just an infant laying on the floor in the hallway. He left his infant son on the floor.
For a gag.
As his way of, for a gag. who I later adopted, and no. So,
nice.
So anyway, that's how the group came together. Yeah.
That's crazy. So you've got this whole crew at the, because I just love the genesis of all this. So you've got like, it's like you and Bob and Judd, and you're doing the Ben Stiller show. You guys get canceled. You win the Emmy for best comedy after the show's canceled, which is like, what was your speech? Like, hey, fuck you, Fox? Or
something like that. It wasn't very articulate. I was like, I think it was like, hey, Fox, you missed something here or something.
Yeah. So then you do that.
That'll show them.
Do you go right on to Reality Bites after that?
Well, I was going to say, within a couple of years, you go on to Reality Bites, which you act in, which you direct. Did you write Reality Bites?
Your first film as a director, right?
No. Helen Childress wrote it. Yes, it was my first film as a director. I'd been developing it while we were working on the Ben Stiller show with Helen, who wrote it about her life. And then the show got canceled, and just about the time Winona Ryder said she wanted to do the movie, which made it happen. So that was the reason it
happened. Wasn't Jon Stewart in that as well?
Jon Stewart? No.
Was he? No?
Who was in that film?
In Reality Bites?
Name the
Ethan Hawke.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I always get those two confused. It always happens to me.
I'm an Ethan Hawke fan. I'm going to go on the record and say I'm an Ethan Hawke fan.
Yeah.
Ethan's amazing.
Yeah, so
he's amazing.
So tough.
Did you see him do True West recently?
No, I wanted to.
With
so
Paul
bad.
Dano? Oh, my God.
I've been observing a thing called a pandemic, Ben. Go on.
It's pre-pandemic.
Jesus Christ, did I go to the thing? What are you talking about?
Do we go right into There's Something About Mary after Reality Bites? And if so...
No. There's a there's like a 5-year gap.
Where to go, Jason? Your guess.
Yeah.
Sorry. Well, it's Wikipedia. It's their fault. Was Cable Guy before There's Something About Mary?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
so that was your second film that you directed.
Yeah. Cable Guy.
Incredible film.
I love that film too.
Not really well received at the time.
They just didn't get it. They didn't get it at the time.
Oh, I thought it was fantastic.
Just like the Ben Stiller show.
Ben, did you put, we're firing away questions now. Did you put Cable Guy, Owen Wilson's in there in a small role? Is that right?
That's how I met Owen.
And it was right after Bottle Rocket, because that came out about 95.
That's exactly right.
I'm so good with dates.
I saw the Bottle Rocket short. There was a black and white Bottle Rocket short that Wes made. Yeah.
Incredible.
And
the film, Bottle Rocket, is one of the best films. And I remember one time, here's my recollections of Owen Wilson. I see that movie. I was living in New York at the time. I was like, this is fucking cool, this movie these assholes made. And then I go to L.A. and I happen to see him like at Valet. And I'm like, look at that. That's the guy from Bottle Rocket. And then he's in Cable Guy. And then I'm like,
I sort of fell in love with Owen Wilson. I was like, this guy is the funniest guy I've ever seen.
He's smooth.
I went to see Bottle Rocket by myself at like Century City Theater or something, and I had just hired him for Cable Guy, and I watched that movie and I started laughing like 5 minutes in by myself for the whole movie. I was like, this is the funniest, like, oh my God, this guy is incredible.
It's so funny. His delivery was so peculiar.
Oh man.
I know.
How many films have you done with him? And was the next one after A Cable Guy, did you guys work together again before Starsky and Hutch?
I'm stressing out now because I can't remember.
Zoolander.
Zoolander was 2001. Yeah, we did. I mean, we did a movie called Permanent Midnight.
Yes.
Where it was like this little indie where I played Jerry Stahl, who was a comedy writer who was addicted to heroin, and he played my best friend in that. That was 98.
Who wrote on Elf.
Yeah, exactly. And which my mom was on, actually. And and then what did we do? We did, and then we did Zoolander together, which was like 2000, 2001. Then I think Starsky and Hutch was after that, which was, of course, Jason.
You've probably done like, what, 6 with him, 7 with
him? I think somebody said we've done like 11.
No way.
Yeah.
Right, because then you did all the Night at the Museum movies together. Oh,
exactly,
right,
that's 3
and then,
there.
And then,
except we never actually worked together because he was like a little person in it.
Oh, yes, right, like a little figurine.
And so I would go.
Oh, that's right.
This is how they would work. It's like we would go to the Museum of Natural History in New York at the beginning for a day or maybe 2 days to shoot the exteriors. Then we would go to Vancouver for 5 months in the middle of winter and be in the studio where it was the fake museum. And then Owen would come in the last 3 days and shoot all of his stuff and, you know, steal the movie.
Against a green screen.
Yeah, exactly.
With the incredible Canadian rocket ship, Sean Levy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I love him.
The ball of fire.
I auditioned for the sequel, The Night at the Museum 2.
Really?
And I went in and read for Sean Levy. And I go, you know, maybe I did the scene, and I go, you know, maybe funny if this thing and this, and I took out the thing here, and I did this, and he goes, yeah, why, you want to direct it? Thanks for coming. Oh.
No, seriously?
Yeah, I came in with a lot of too many
ideas. He's got a sneaky knife there in that Canadian kind suit of his.
He sure does.
He'll whip it out every once in a while.
He's a friend of the program. He's a friend of the program. Sean's a friend of the program.
No, he's great.
So what did you answer? Do you say yes, you wanted to direct it? Because what an opportunity. By the way, she's the opportunity.
We bonded on that movie.
So Ben, how hard was it? Do you wish, like, regret-wise career, do you wish cut Bateman out of Starsky? Would that be up there?
Simple. It's a real easy cut. Not a lot of trimming.
No, but then you guys also do, I was joking, because you guys did a few movies. You also did Dodgeball.
That's right.
That was an afternoon.
Yeah, but I feel like that afternoon really made a mark. I mean, memes.
It helped me.
Jason, you were hilarious in that.
Thank you. That was during a lunch hour from Arrested Development.
Really? Are you serious?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I drove down to where did we shoot it? Like the Rose Bowl, I think.
It was, did you do that at the Rose Bowl? Because we also shot down in Long Beach, too.
Yeah. One of the two.
I mean, really, that was really fun. That was a really fun experience. And
I remember walking out of that screening. I was sitting next to Todd Phillips at the screening, the premiere of that in Westwood. I remember watching it, and I had no idea what the movie was. I mean, again, I was only there for half an hour, you know, doing this, you know, basically a lock off me behind a microphone playing some idiot color announcer. And I had no idea what the comedic tone of that. And so I didn't really know what the film was about until I saw it at the screening. And we finished the screening, and obviously—
The name of the movie is Dodgeball.
Dodgeball. Very, very funny.
Yeah.
Incredibly broad. But I guess I just wasn't prepared for the style, the flavor of humor. I remember walking out with Todd Phillips and doing the taboo thing when you're going up the aisleway, talking about the film, you know. And I said, boy, I don't know. I mean, what do you think? He's like, oh, that was pretty damn good. I go, really? He said, yeah. I said, I'll tell you what, Todd, I'll make you a $100 bet this thing doesn't do a dollar over $50 million. He goes, I'll bet you $1,000. I said, you're on. I think it does. What does it do? Like, I think it did that in the first weekend or something.
It did well. It opened number one. I know that. It was
my God. What
surprising.
A force. That fucking movie.
Did you pay
so
him?
Funny.
Jason, did you pay him $1,000?
I don't think so. No. Yeah, well, Todd's doing okay.
That's why he's Todd Phillips. Come on.
Yeah, you owe him $1,000 and he can
that's funny though, Jason, because I feel like you totally hit the tone of the movie without knowing.
Because
it.
I remember,
and in fact,
I remember
Jason,
when
you
I
were
first,
in your own movie. You had your own little movie going, which is amazing.
I remember when I first got to the set, I remember going down, I found you and Ross in Video Village. You guys were shooting a different scene, and I got there a little early to get into makeup because my hair had to get all spiked up and stuff. And so I was like, so guys, so the spike freaky hair. Like, that's the tone. That's the funny. And you guys were both like, yeah, yeah. I go, huh. And then I don't know whether it was my idea or Rawson's or yours, maybe, Ben. I said, well, like, is it like, would this guy have like a flaming neck tattoo of like a dodgeball on it? And they were like, yes,
yes.
Do that. So it's like a flaming dodgeball neck tattoo. I was like, I think I got the tone now. I think I get it.
Yeah. You know who never really understood was Rip Torn, who was so funny in the movie. He never got, and my brother-in-law was in charge, Brian Taylor was in charge of taking care of him for the movie. Like, he was sort of like his handler.
He's
and
his got in some,
yeah. And he never really, you know, jumped on board, but he was so funny because he was so just funny. Being Rip
my
Torn.
My favorite Rip Torn story was, I remember Jeffrey on Arrested telling us when they were doing Larry Sanders, and they were in their last season, and they decide that they're going to get Gary Shandling. Everybody's going to chip in and buy him a car. They've done this show for 5-6 seasons. And everybody's going to chip in as this big rap, then as a thank you to Gary, they're going to get him a car. So Jeffrey's tasked with going to get it, and he goes up to Rip's dressing room, and he knocks on the dressing room door, and he goes, Rip opens it and goes, yeah, what? And he goes, oh, hey, Rip, we're all pitching in. We're going to get Gary a gift for a rap for the whole series. And he goes, oh, yeah? What are we going to get him? And he goes, well, we've decided we're all going to chip in. We're going to get him in a car. Rip looks at him and goes, go fuck yourself. And slams the door shut on him. His answer was go fuck yourself.
I think one day on set he decided he was just going to go fishing. He like left to go fishing.
In the middle of a shoot day.
It did.
And we will be right back.
Hey, Smartless listener, we get support from Viator. You know, Scotty and I took a vacation many years ago. We geeked out because we liked the movie Amadeus, and we went to Austria, and it was fantastic. We went to all Mozart's kind of hangout places, and I know, total nerdville, but it was pretty cool, and I absolutely loved it. It will always be one of our favorite memories of vacationing, so maybe one of the most perfect experiences we've ever had traveling. And so next time you're looking to plan the perfect trip like that, an experience, check out Viator. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. Their app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you are traveling or what you're interested in. Feel better about your travel decisions by checking out real traveler reviews to get the inside scoop from others who have already checked out the experiences. Viator offers 24/7 customer service so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. Plus, free cancellation to help you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartless. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and bar mates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplish something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
And now back to the show.
When you read the script for There's Something About Mary, did you have like incredible faith in those directors, writers, that it was all going to be a target that is hit? Or it seemed like a big swing.
It was, yeah. I remember reading the script very clearly and laughing out loud reading the script and thinking that this will either be really, really, really funny or it'll just be awful. It'll be like just like the worst movie ever. Like it will not work.
But like that's a perfect example of like the value you bring to something that's taking swings as big as that. You need a Ben Stiller in the middle of it.
Yeah,
you
know? But they weren't coming after me for that movie. I wanted to be in that movie. I was trying to, you know, get in that movie.
You were chasing it.
Yeah, and because I really did think it could be really funny, but I didn't know. And then, like, working with the Farrellys on the set, that was where I was like, wait a minute, is this actually going to work? Because it was such a weird environment.
How so?
I mean, because it was just not like any movie set I'd ever been on. There was like they were just having so much fun and playing practical jokes on each other, you know, very politically incorrect practical jokes.
Right. And, putting all their friends in scenes and stuff.
Yeah, putting friends in scenes and not really talking about like motivation or things like that. And you know, like I would get into like arguments with them about like the logic of a scene or, you know, like, oh, I'm in the bathroom and my dick's in the zipper, but like why are all these people walking by the window? It's like I felt like I was in a Marx Brothers movie or something. You know, or like there was like, you know, the scene where it's like dripping on my ear, you know, and I was like, why don't I feel that on my ear? Why wouldn't I feel it? Should we set up that I lost sensitivity in my ear when I was a child or something? Oh my earlobe doesn't feel anything. And they were like, no, it's just going to be funny. A lot of those conversations. Yeah.
Like, Ben, don't worry about it. Don't fucking Ben.
So
Ben,
I was the pain in the ass actor, Jason.
Right.
On that
you were
movie.
The Jason. Right. You were the Bateman on that set.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I've always felt like if we just work just 2 minutes longer, we can establish that he's lost sensitivity in the ear, and then for anyone who's a cynic in the audience, we got him covered.
That's a real conversation I had. I had a serious conversation that.
And I would respond to that conversation.
Jason would have turned that into a sidebar.
I'd be like, yes, on page 20, we can drop that little breadcrumb. Good idea,
exactly,
Ben.
Exactly. Yeah.
We used to always, by the way, their answer, I'm sure, was always like, you know what, Ben, don't worry about it. Cam Neely thinks it's funny. But and also that, like, I used to say to Jason sometimes,
what's up,
be,
Cam?
Yeah, asking questions. And I know, by the way, what's up, Cam? One of the great all-time hockey players. Jason, we sometimes go, hey, you know what? Why don't you take that over to workshop on the workshop stage over on stage 7, okay? We'll talk about that over there. Let's just get the scene today, huh?
Hey, Ben, so now that you are onto bigger things like directing great shows like Severance and whatever else you have
less
done.
Less cum-laden projects.
Yes. Yeah. So are you?
He's finished with The Hustler of Money and There's Something About Mary.
Are you looking for less cum in your future projects?
Go, Sean.
What attracts you to certain projects? Are you, like, for example, like Severance is a little sci-fi-y. Are you a sci-fi fan? Did you accept that because of the challenge
of it?
He hates
Star Trek.
Or
just know that.
Or do you only choose things that are like what wouldn't you choose?
At this point, I kind of just go with a gut feeling, honestly. Like, if I read something or I start to develop something, it's because it's something that I just really feel turned on by and I really like.
Like,
and
would
I
you ever do a horror film?
Maybe, but I wouldn't want to do it just to do
horror.
It.
Or you're saying horror?
Horror.
Yeah. Okay.
Horror.
Sorry?
Horror.
Okay, thank you.
Horror.
Okay, good.
But with Severance, I thought it was funny actually when I read it.
Yeah, it is,
because it reminded me of The Office and Office Space and that kind of humor. You know, that thing that's developed.
The melancholy, bleak humor.
Yeah, no, it became much less funny.
You're awesome at.
Yeah, I just thought conceptually it was really interesting to do that kind of humor, but yet the people had no idea who they were or what they were doing or why they were there. Right. But yet they're in this sort of rhythm, you know?
I love knowing both you and Adam. I love and being such a fan of both of yours in every respect and watching the scenes and thinking about you guys collaborating to me is very exciting to watch, because I see both you guys. Yeah. He's operating at such a high level, and I can feel your hand in it as well, but not heavy-handed, but I can feel both of you guys work.
Because you met on Walter Mitty, right?
Yeah.
It's so good. Ben, it's so good, man.
Thanks, man. Well, thank you. But I think Adam is amazing. I mean, we met on Walter Mitty. I saw him in Step Brothers, which really just blew my mind funny he was in that movie. I couldn't stop watching him do those scenes where, you know, the dinner table scenes where, and, you know, and it was more than just being like a dick or whatever. Like, he had just this level of specificity that just, it was incredible to me.
I love him.
I want to talk about, like, your ability to direct and write and act in stuff that's, like, epic, but also, like, Walter Mitty and Tropic Thunder, I think, are the scope and scale of those movies.
Agreed.
Are just enormous, but you're still able to get real small and specific with some character comedy that's not, it's not jokey, it's not this, it's not, I mean, I guess there's incredible jokes in Tropic Thunder, but it's still, I don't know, you're able to manage, it seems like, multiple genres in one project. There's no real question here. Just admiration.
Thanks. I mean, I think it's like not, you know, getting away from genres. Did you see that movie, The Worst Person in the World?
Not yet, but
Man.
Paul Thomas Anderson was on the podcast, and he was talking really big about it. Yeah.
Well, it's and he does it too. It's, you know, I admire filmmakers, and I haven't done this, but filmmakers who just say, screw it with genre. I don't care about the genre.
Yeah.
Who are able to just say, I'm going to make them. And maybe in their head they're thinking it's this genre, that genre, or relates to that, but they're just going to make something that to them is a movie that, you know, that they relate to and that they feel makes them feel something. And that's for me, like, I try not to think about the genre, you know, at that much, and just try to go, okay, what's going to make this funny? What's going to make this real in this moment? And that's what tone is, you know?
But what's going to make it powerful? Like with Mitty, it was just so powerful and heavy at times. And when it wanted to become sort of this epic fable, it did. When it wanted to get really small and intimate, it did.
And that was a passion project for you, Ben. It took you a long time to get that up there.
Well, yeah.
And Steve Conrad did such an incredible job writing that.
It's all Steve Conrad. He wrote the script, and it came to me. And then that was one I also wanted to be a part of. And then Steve and I were able to connect on it. And I really loved working with him on it. Because
he's doing incredible work on television, too.
Oh, my God. Patriot. Yeah. That show, like, talk about defying genres, you know?
Ben, you've always had a really great eye for, and we mentioned Owen, but you've had a really great eye for emerging talent, and you've always stayed really close to what's going on, especially in comedy, not in film in general, I think, as well, but especially comedy. Who are the people these days who are making you laugh? You're going, fuck, this is new. This is somebody doing something in a different, and you've always respected people who do it in a way, like you said about Owen, again, people who do it differently.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm, you know, I feel sometimes that I'm not as connected as I should be. I'm not seeing everything and out there because I kind of get wrapped up in working on the project I'm working on. And so I'll see people who come in and audition or read or I don't watch as much television as I feel that I should.
Are you good about watching films?
I'm not as good at, lately I'm not. Yeah. I'm not as good at watching a lot of stuff. I get inundated. I feel like it's just so, like there's so much to watch.
Right.
You know, I did get recommended to watch this show Dave and
Dave
Bird,
funny. There are some moments in that are so funny.
He's really specific, he's really honest. You know, he's the rapper Lil Dicky. I thought it really developed over the two seasons. There's an episode with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar that is so funny,
really,
where and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is so good.
Is
I mean
really?
He was good in Airplane, but like he's really good in this. But Dave, to me, it's like this guy is he's just being really, really honest and creating his own tone, but it's really funny. And it's self-effacing. guessing, but it's honest. And I think that's, you know, to me, when you see somebody doing that, it's really exciting.
Having done so much at such a high level for so long, you know, this qualifies as a completely fully realized career, yet you're still a young man. So the stuff that I'm assuming you want to still get done, since you've kind of checked all boxes, is just what, just a continue sort of an escalation in your taste, your talent, in the same genres and the same, you know, television, film, comedy, drama, whatever it is. It's just your taste is going to continue to evolve, and that's what you want to continue doing. Is just keep
he wants to know.
To
he's trying to ask Ben. Sorry, it's a long way to go. He's trying to ask if you're Oscar hunting. That's what he wants to know.
Who isn't Jason?
Right.
You know, or do you want to do something about a guy who's like in his early 50s who started working out and he went to fight camp and he probably plays 38? You know what I mean? is that a story that interests you? Like a guy, like he's unassuming, he's kind of dry. Shut it, Sean. I'm telling a story about a guy who nobody's ever seen before.
Who's very well lit. Yeah.
He's very well lit.
You know, it's a good question, Jason. It's a really good question. And I'm sort of constantly asking myself that, I guess, as I go through life these days, because I'm trying to find the balance. And, you know, that's really important to me, is the balance of being able to have a personal life that I feel good in. Yeah. And I've found over the years, and, you know, I'm sure you've all experienced this, that it's challenging to do that. Yeah. And I think I'm more self-aware these days about that. But I love directing. I'm trying to reconnect with my acting self, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really trying to figure it out. I know I love acting, but I don't want to also do it. There's something, you know, just to be honest, there's something very enticing about being an actor and being a star of things and having, you know, all that attention.
Well, and also it's of all the jobs, producer, writer, director, actor, whatever, it's kind of like you have your shit and you don't have to worry about all the big picture stuff. You know, you have to worry about your scene work.
But that I'm trying not to go, I don't want to go back to it just because I kind of enjoy that part of it, you know?
Right. Or the moolah. The moolah's really good too.
But you're enjoying working as an actor in what are like director vehicles, like working with some of your heroes.
I would love to do that. Yes, I'd love to keep acting in other people's movies, or even television shows too. Yeah. Figuring out a comedy to do, I would love to jump back in. I've been talking to Mike Judge about something, and I think I love Mike Judge. And
Jason, you worked with him. What an incredible comedic voice. What about doing something like Sean does, though? Like, would you be able to go? Sean's in Chicago. Talk about sacrificing. He goes there and he's rehearsing and doing this play nonstop every day. To Ben, I don't know if you know this, Sean's had incredible reviews for his film.
Great.
Yeah,
thank you.
And
I want to see this play. And I had a personal interest in the Oscar Levant story because Stuart Kornfeld had championed it for a long time.
No kidding.
Yeah. I've got up in my living room a Richard Avedon portrait of Levant from late in his life.
Wow.
Incredible shot when he, you know, very near the end, which is just really kind of a striking photo.
Yes, I know the one.
You totally make sense for you to give it to Sean.
Yeah, to just give it to him.
Or come over to my house and look at it.
No,
yeah,
just commit to giving it to him now. You're on the show. But could you ever see yourself, Ben, doing that, doing 8 shows a week on Broadway? And
you've done that,
yes,
haven't you?
I could. I have done it, not for a long time. I've been thinking about that too. It could be really, really... it's scary, I'm curious, Sean, have you enjoyed the process?
Very much so. I mean, talk about, you know, I think it's right up your alley, Ben, not that you don't know that already, but just the day-to-day scene work, the dramaturgy of discovering, you know, intense.
Right, when you keep going with something, because you never get to do that when you're doing a movie
or a show.
That you get into performance 100 or 150, and all of a sudden you're having to discover new stuff, and it can open up in a way that it never did before.
It's really cool, and you discover, and through the rehearsal process, you break down just every word, every sentence, every moment, and it's and you refine it, and it's really cool.
And isn't there also a great simplicity to doing theater too, where it's like you live your life, you wake up, you know, you have your routine, you maybe ride your bike to the theater, you know, you have your backpack.
I mean, there, it's simple if you're not a crazy person like I am, which is like I wake up, I'm like, I gotta warm up my, and do the voice thing, and then you gotta make sure you drink it and eat the right thing, and then you gotta go early.
Finger exercises for all the piano playing, right?
Are you actually playing the piano?
I'm actually playing the Rhapsody in Blue.
He's a classically trained pianist.
He's doing
he's incredible.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And so everything is leading to that performance time.
Well, it's
it's
a really cool concept. Doug Wright, who wrote it, it's a true story that Oscar Levant got a pass from the treatment center that he was in, a 4-hour pass, to get out and appear on a game show for our play. We switched it to the Tonight Show because everybody knows the Tonight Show. So he's got 4 hours to appear, then he has to go back to treatment. And it's what happened in that incredible night.
And Sean does it every night, and he plays the piano, and he does all these, and he's got like 80 monologues, and he does this all on a belly full of McDonald's every night, right?
Will actually ran line. Will ran lines with me on the tour, and he was like, you have to fucking say that.
It was, honestly, Ben, I thought like, it's I would call it and just say, I'm not showing up. I'm sorry.
I quit.
That's incredible.
Speaking of quitting.
Yes.
Ben,
we've taken up, we could do 3 hours with you.
I love being a part of your show. Your show is awesome. By the way, in our family, it's the one podcast, because we're not a big podcast family, but it's reached the whole family. My daughter, I think, has listened to every single episode.
No way.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, tell her hi, please.
Yeah, big fan. Gosh. Even Christine, who's not a big podcast listener, really enjoys the show.
Tell her hi, too.
I thought you were going to say, even Christine, who dislikes Will immensely. Yeah.
Here's how much my daughter likes it. She has no interest in F1, Formula One racing. I'm really into it. My son Quinn is really into it,
too. Willie's into it.
But she and I were driving from Boston to New York, and we listened to the Daniel Ricciardo episode. Uh-huh. And she sat through it because she cares nothing about F1, but because she loves the show, she listened to it. I thought that was a fascinating episode to hear him talk about.
I thought so, too.
How great was he? So fascinating.
But anyway, the show's awesome, and happy to be with you guys.
We didn't even cover any of the torrid love affair between Tony Wonder and Joe Bluth.
I know.
But if you guys want to have a private moment, there's
Ben, do you ever have people come up to you and just say, same? Do you remember, Ben, do you remember how insane that day was when we shot that stuff? We laughed so hard. God,
ridiculous.
It's so much fun, Sean.
Our characters on Arrested. Sean's never Arrested Development was a show. It used to be on.
He's not
Jason
aware of it.
And Ben was on, and his wife Christine. The whole Stiller family was on. And you were not on, and you've never watched it. And it's nice of you, Sean. But Ben and our recurring thing over the years is that our characters are competing magicians. And at the very end, it turns out that maybe they were in love with each other, but maybe not. But maybe neither of them had never really had a friend, so that's why they liked each other.
That's hysterical.
It was insane.
Yeah. Very ambiguous. Yeah,
and we were really connected when we got together. Yeah, like both in sort of like same. You know. Yeah, same.
That's really funny.
So
well, we love you here at SmartList, Ben.
Yeah, we love you, Ben. Thank you so much.
Love you guys,
hi
too.
Hi to the family, and thank you for saying yes to sitting with us for an hour.
Great to see you all, and hopefully we'll see each other soon.
Great to see you, too.
That'd be great. All right, buddy.
All right.
Talk soon.
Bye, guys.
Bye, Ben.
Bye.
So
long. Bye, Ben.
Ben Franklin Stiller. Unbelievable.
He's
huh?
great. I mean, isn't he? He's one of the most famous comedic actors of our generation.
He's done so much. I mean, so many little bits of history on him.
I know, it's
tons
nuts.
Of things.
If you had done any research at all, Jason, then we would have
been here for 3 hours.
Some of the stuff, just anything. But Jason, do you remember that first day when he showed up on Arrested and we only had him for like 2 hours because he was in the middle of like 8 big movies?
Yeah.
And just the whole set, we were like, everybody was just a buzz.
Yeah.
Ben Stiller wanted to do our show, and we got to do this. We had him for like 12 minutes.
It was crazy. I was so glad that I didn't have to work with him. I would have been a nervous wreck.
I was with Tony Hale, I guess, with Buster that first time. I was so nervous.
Yeah.
And I'd met him just a couple times. He'd done that movie with Amy and Jack.
But you used it, though, right? I seem to remember Job sort of like took on this air of like, oh, here's my competition.
Yeah.
You know, like being kind of like all nervous and kind of uptight and aggressive.
I was mad at him, but I was also still like, you know.
Deeply in love. Yeah. making faces.
Jay, have you had a chance to check out Severance yet?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah,
it's bitching. Oh,
I haven't.
God.
I'm only three. Like I said, three episodes in. So please don't say anything. I love this show so much.
I didn't even. No, I won't. But I didn't know he directed it. I watched it.
Oh really?
And then I was like, I said this guy. I was like, God, this is directed so well. I'm not making that up. We looked it up. I was like, Ben Stiller directed it. That's crazy.
I mean, something that specific and that precise, it doesn't just happen. Like, there is a really qualified hand at
you know,
play.
You know, Jason, you were kind of saying when he sets up the, like, shooting the thing, when they do those huge establishing shots of that place where they work and just the way it looks and the tone of the shot, just aesthetically, all of it. And you're like, it's so different and new from what you know of his body of work, and you're like, oh, he's doing something totally new. And I get that he's trying to go genreless.
Yeah,
that he's just like, I'm going to do this now.
Yeah. But he's just basically. He's listening to his taste, I guess. And that was my question: like, how does a guy that comes from what is traditionally, you know, like the sketch world, doesn't put a big value on, you know, aesthetics and, like, you know, focal length on lenses and things, like, you know, it is all about, well, let's just write some funny stuff and make sure the camera's pointed at the person talking. You know, how does he develop that kind of taste and affinity for, you know, the stuff he's doing now? I don't know, but clearly it's a whole other side of him that
I don't know.
He's
probably inspired by lots of different, you know, he's an incredibly funny comedic actor, then an incredibly funny comedic filmmaker, because he kind of did those two things simultaneously.
Yeah.
And then now he's just going and people are sending him scripts and he's just getting inspired by whatever's nearby.
Nearby.
Oh, fantastic. Wow, look at you sneaking up from the rear. Yeah.
That's how you do a fucking bye, you dicks.
Unbelievable. God. Well, I'm going to go think about that one.
I hate having to teach so much.
You must be exhausted.
I'm exhausted from teaching. I'm teaching and I'm learning.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Rob Armjarv, Bennett Barbaco, and Michael Grant Terry.
Smartless.
If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.